are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Jordan Reed?
Yeah, he has him at 44. I don't know where Evan went.
Jordan Matthews?
Fuck.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yep. Do they still have to worry about playing future at the games like they did at the playoff game in Atlanta?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, you could also buy into the narrative, too, that now that he and Ciara are married, that he no longer is rocking blue balls for production either. So.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I am your host, Ben Brentz. I am joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Evan?
I heard you stutter there for a second. You almost forgot that we were doing this football thing, huh?
No, I kind of just forgot what website I worked for.
There was also that.
But how are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing great, Ben. You haven't been torturing me at all.
Well, I'm glad that everything that I do doesn't torture you. I'm glad we've got past that part. We're also joined tonight by Eric Mackey. How are you doing, Eric?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing good. Eric, you know, I've come to notice that every single time we do a podcast, you and I greet each other the exact same way every single time. I think we're going to have to finally change something up about our intro.
It's consistency.
It is consistency. We're also joined tonight by, for his very first podcast, I should say, Mr. Donnie Miller. Donnie, how are you doing tonight?
Good. First time.
Donnie, it's good to have you on. We're looking forward to at least being able to get a good rankings discussion in for the football season. Donnie, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm currently interning with the Aces at the moment in the sales office. Hopefully, I've always wanted a job in sports, wrote for a couple sites, currently writing for Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and just going to see what happens, basically.
Well, that's good. We're glad to have you on. Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
Hold on, let me pull it up.
What? You forgot where you are on Twitter?
I don't know what it is, because I always have to change it. It's just Donnie Miller, FWFB.
All right. And Eric, we can reach you at Mackey671FWFB, correct?
That's factually correct.
And Evan can be reached at EvFWFB. And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Guys, we're going to be talking a little bit about some rank disparities that we have had amongst ourselves through the first initial rankings drop that we have had for the Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Why don't we jump right in and start talking about the quarterbacks. The first quarterback group that the first quarterback that we were not seeing eye to eye on was Russell Wilson. So, Donnie, why don't we let you start off and tell us where you are with Russell Wilson coming into this season.
I have Wilson number 8. For the quarterbacks this year, their offense is basically the same. They added Lacy though, so hopefully they can get back to running the smash mouth football that they used to and get back to Wilson's 15 numbers, which he had 34 passing touchdowns, and then last year he was down to 21, so that was a big drop, but hopefully they can get back to running the ball and opening up the offense. And that way they can get Wilson, keep him healthy, and just open up the field, basically.
All right. Why don't we move over to Eric, who's actually the high man amongst us on Russell Wilson. He's at number 6. Eric, why are you so high on Russell this upcoming season?
Well, I think realistically with Wilson, you know, 2015 was definitely a career year. And while I don't expect him to kind of reach that ceiling again. The majority of last year, on the first part of the year, he had a sprained ankle, and so really that mobility wasn't there. Their running game was a complete mess, and so basically the secondary could just sit there and key off the wide receivers and double cover them, things like that. And without that mobility and threat to run as much, Wilson basically wasn't much of a threat till the tail end of the season. So I kind of expect a little bit of regression off of 2015, but I think, you know, if he comes into the season, you've got the same offense. You're still dealing with a little bit of running back by committee with Fat Eddie Lacy and Thomas Rawls there, but it's a lot more solidified offense, I think. You've still got kind of a questionable line, but to some extent that's going to help him as far as like the rushing stats are concerned. So I think he'll bounce back from what he did last year, and just kind of with where he might end up, if people are only remembering last year for recency bias, you could probably get him at a fairly decent value.
All right, and what about you, Evan? You and I both have him at 10. We're the lowest on all of the rankers on him. So what are your thoughts exactly?
Well, like Donnie was saying, if people want to buy into the nostalgia of his 30 touchdown 2015, that was based on an outrageous 7% touchdown rate. That number's been floated around with Matt Ryan this year as unsustainable, and I just think that Matt Ryan's a better passer than Russell Wilson. And now, overall ability, I do understand the narrative of Wilson's injury, and if you tack on about another 200 rushing yards, which would kind of put him back up to what he's seen prior to last year, he would become about like the number six quarterback. But I just don't see a big uptick in the offense. I don't know. I'm not a big Baldwin guy. Graham is 31 and, you know, was an absolute train wreck towards the end of the year. I'm just not really sold on the offense. And unless I'm getting him at an extreme bargain, like the 10th quarterback, then I'm just not really in on like buying in early on Russell.
Yeah. For me, I'm kind of in the same spot as you are. I think, obviously, the injury had sapped some of his athleticism early on in the season, but I don't think they've done enough to be able to address the offensive line, to be able to give him enough coverage around the pocket so that he can either, A, choose to scramble if he needs to, or that he is able to find his quick out receivers if that's the type of play that they're going to try to run. I understand that he has been relatively consistent from year to year, but I mean, last year he did finish as the number 10 in standard scoring for quarterbacks. I do expect him to make a slight improvement, but I think that the other quarterbacks that are in the league have made significant improvements with the staff around them that it causes Russell Wilson, who I believe has a better year than last year, to stay around that number 10 spot. Does anyone have anything else to add on Russell Wilson?
Well, you could also buy into the narrative, too, that now that he and Ciara are married, that he no longer is rocking blue balls for production either. So.
I think that's a hot take we've been looking for, Eric, so thank you.
Yep. Do they still have to worry about playing future at the games like they did at the playoff game in Atlanta?
That'd be fantastic either way, I think.
I was at that game, and they tortured him.
Why don't we move into the next player? And that's going to be talking about Dak Prescott. Personally, for me, I have Dak Prescott ranked the lowest of all of us. But why don't we start with the high man of the group, and that's Eric Mackey. Eric, what are your thoughts on Dak coming into the season?
Well, I think, you know, kind of looking at what Prescott did coming into the season, and essentially, you know, had success right off the bat. And a lot of that, you know, kind of the argument with Dak is that he's more of like a system-based quarterback, things like that. But kind of with what Garrett did last year, and especially with Dez basically being ineffective for the first 8 to 10 games of the season, he basically just essentially designed the offense around what Dak's capabilities were and didn't put him into bad situations. You started seeing a little bit more maturation of him as a quarterback as the season progressed, he's got really good mobility. He started actually making multiple reads within that offense, and he's coming into the year with a healthy Dez Bryant. Now you've got a year under Ezekiel Elliott, and you still have one of the best lines in football. So, you know, for me, I still think with what he can give you, I'd rather take him over some of the other guys that we've got ranked underneath him. But I like his potential for upside this year within that offense.
And what are your thoughts on Dak coming into the season, Evan?
Well, fun little bit of trivia on Dak Prescott. He was one of four quarterbacks that had more than 8 yards per pass thrown last year. Matt Ryan led the league with 9.4. Brady was at 8.2. Cousins at 8.1. Prescott at 8. The only problem is he just needs to throw more passes, and it's something that Dallas hasn't really done over the past, you know, like 3 years. They've been towards the bottom in the league in pass attempts. I think part of it is going to be getting Dez back on the field at 100% for the whole season. Part of it might be the chatter this offseason that Ezekiel Elliott is going to have more of a receiving role. And I think, you know, like Eric was talking about, the mobility, where he does have a little bit of growth in that area too. So if he can grow across the board, where as opposed to like Wilson, who we're only really looking to grow in his rushing, then I think you could see a big, you know, jump from Dak.
What are your thoughts, Donnie?
So I have Dak at 13, but he just, there's nothing flashy about him. Like, he threw for 3,600 yards, 23 touchdowns last year. And then he had 6 rushing touchdowns. But, I mean, you don't, half the league throws for 4,000 yards now. And with how the Cowboys play, it's just, it's smash mouth, give Zeke the ball 30 times. I just don't know how he's going to score close to 30 or more touchdowns again for him to be a top 10 quarterback in that offense.
Yeah, the reason that I'm so low on Dak is the fact that he had 6 rushing touchdowns last year, which was tied for most in the league with Tyrod Taylor amongst quarterbacks. I don't know if that's going to be a number that he's going to be able to put up again. He, out of the top 12 quarterbacks, he had the least amount of interceptions thrown. He had the least amount of he had the second least amount of passing attempts of the top 12 scoring quarterbacks last year. And the only person who's behind him is Tyrod Taylor, who missed 2 games. So, you know, they aren't showing that they pass a ton. I don't know if the running touchdowns are going to be able to replicate itself. I expect him to have more interceptions this year. And he has the second least amount of passing yards amongst all the top 12 scoring quarterbacks. Once again, only second to Tyrod Taylor, who is a more of a run-first quarterback than a throw-first quarterback, especially with Rex Ryan in Buffalo. And he wasn't, well,
he's not in Buffalo.
He was in Buffalo.
So Sam Bradford threw for more yards than he did last year.
Okay,
the guy
well,
that checks down. He does is check the ball down.
And Dak's a rookie, so, I mean, you can project some growth. As far as the interceptions, which, I mean, like Ben was saying, they probably have to come back. Well, that's because didn't he set, like, a record for the most, you know, attempts for a rookie before he threw a pick? So the other thing, he can keep the interceptions down, even though they're going to go up a little bit. And behind that line, he only took 25 sacks last year. So if you play in leagues that play with negative points for those things, then he's actually going to help benefit you, as opposed to being sacked 40 times and throwing 10 picks like Russell Wilson might, for example.
Yeah, I mean, of all of the top tier quarterbacks, I mean, last year Dax was the least turnover prone, so he has that going for him. But because of that, I do expect that number to regress. I understand that they still have a great offensive line and that they did stuff that wouldn't put him in jeopardy of having a lot of turnovers, and I understand that. But at the same point in time, the more you let the offense around him expand as he gets a better understanding of how the NFL works and how defensive works, he's going to take more opportunities, which will cause him to have more turnover potential. Yes, it could increase the amount of yards that he has, but at the same point in time, as I was saying earlier when we were talking about Russell Wilson, I do believe that the other teams around them have done a lot to increase the talent around them as well, that what Dax puts up that could be good numbers may not be good enough to become a starting top 12 quarterback in a standard league for us.
What's your opinion of him in the event that the NFL does take action on Ezekiel Elliott stemming from that domestic abuse case? Do you think his value goes up or down?
Well, I think it's forced to go up as a fact that they don't have a top all-pro running back there. And as a result, they have to put a little more pressure on Dak to lead the offense. Now, we have seen that he is capable of doing it, and they still have decent backups. But I don't think that it's going to be anywhere near as effective, even given the status of that offensive line, for him to be able to have top 10 consistent value. I think you'll see more hit and miss rather than the consistency from him. I think you'll see some weeks where he has very good fantasy weeks and some weeks that he would have very bad fantasy weeks. Do you agree, Donnie?
Yeah, but I mean, if Zeke does go, if he does get suspended, McFadden's coming in, and he did a rush for, 1,200 yards that 2 years ago. So, I mean, they're still going to run the same offense. Dak will never throw the ball 40 times a game, no matter who they have at running back. Just by how they basically play, they just play that type of offense where they just run the ball. And they don't let Prescott do too much. That's part of the reason why his interceptions were so low.
What about you, Evan? Do you agree or disagree with if something happens to Ezekiel Elliott?
What do you think the chances of Zeke getting suspended are? Totally, you know, blind, as much as anybody else. What do you think the chances of him getting suspended are?
Me personally, I think they're pretty low. I think we would have heard some inklings that there was going to be some type of suspension at this point already. I don't think that – I mean, yes, I understand that the NFL likes to wait and they – you know, it's a very annoying front office to have to listen to in terms of what the punishments come out to be because they are sometimes overly delayed. But I do think that we would have potentially heard something at this point in time considering how close we are getting now. Obviously, once we get to week two of the preseason, that's probably when we have a final say of what it is. But it's not getting dragged out like other things that would have in the past. So I'm not really – I'd put the odds of it happening at pretty slim. I'd say under 15%.
Yeah, and I'm just not – I don't think it changes the offense too terribly to the fact where I would, you know, adjust Dak's overall ranking.
Why don't we move into the last quarterback that we're going to be discussing? That's going to be Carson Wentz. I am once again the low person on, and I have him at number 22. The reason I have Carson Wentz so low is just because I think that while they have done some good bringing in talent around him in Philadelphia, I think that there's still enough work for him to be able to do. I think that, I mean, he had over 600 passing attempts last year, but he did throw 14 interceptions. He doesn't do a ton on the ground. I just think that he would be likely to make some steps, but not enough significant steps to break into the top 18 of quarterbacks. So I think in a two-quarterback league, he's a borderline option for me. What are your thoughts, Donnie?
I like Wentz a lot. Jordan Matthews is not a number one receiver. He's probably not even a number two receiver. So then bringing in Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, that will help a lot. He only threw for 16 touchdowns last year. That number has to go up. And the Eagles are a well-coached team with Doug Peterson. He came over from the Chiefs, worked with Andy Reid for a long time, and John DeFilippo is their quarterback coach. Now, he helped develop Derek Carr and Joe Flacco. So he has to take a leap, basically, from his rookie season.
Do you think that he's going to make such a leap, Eric?
I think the big thing with Wentz coming out is he had all, you know, the ceiling was appeared to be pretty high. The problem is he's still working on his mechanics, things like that. He's still a project, basically. The fact that he actually has, you know, a true number one and a, you know, when healthy, an elite number one to work with now with Alshon Jeffrey there, and they brought him in, you know, Torrey Smith. We'll see if he ends up actually being able to do much of anything in that offense. But, you know, it's a pretty decent, balanced offense overall. I expect him to make some strides, but I still think, for me, he's probably at least a year away from really kind of starting to see what his upside should be, just because they're still messing around with his mechanics. And anytime you get that with a, you know, your quarterback, especially a young one, it's going to take him a lot longer time to develop.
What about you, Evan?
Well, I kind of got sidetracked because Donnie was saying he didn't think Jordan Matthews was a good number two wide receiver. And I was kind of – I mean, he's had over 100 targets his 3 years in the league. He caught 8 touchdowns each of the 2014 and 2015 before he took a step backward. So I think the community is a little low on Matthews. I mean, they didn't have anybody else last year. They were thrown to, like, outside of Ertz, who did – kind of what we thought he was going to do, and Matthews, who, like I said, we saw the drop-offs. You're talking about, like, Dorial Green-Beckham and Nelson Aguilar. Jeffrey is a beast. People, I don't know if we're forgetting that we were drafting him in the second round with Jay Cutler as a quarterback before the injury stuff forced him down boards. He's going to be a stud. Torrey Smith, while I don't think he's a fantastic receiver, it's a dimension that this offense really didn't have last year with kind of a fly guy. And I'm a Wentz guy, so I agree with Donnie in being that high, even though he is technically the high guy on him. Just get high on Jordan Matthews too, man. Like, if Carson Wentz is going to be good, it can't be all Alshon, man.
Isn't that just all volume, though, for Jordan Matthews, basically? I mean, they had no one else to throw the ball to.
I think part of what you saw with Matthews last year is that, you know, you didn't have that true number one, like when Macklin was paired up with him, and he really wasn't productive till they started shifting him into the slot. So there were weeks that it was very volume driven, just based on the fact they ran him out of that position. But, you know, now he can, I honestly think he'll have a better year this year, just because he isn't going to be that kind of number one option that everybody's gunning for, because they know the rest of the receiving corps sucks.
I do find it a little bit funny that, as much as I like Jordan Reed, Donnie is relatively well ranked with where the rest of the staff has him.
Jordan Reed?
Yeah, he has him at 44. I don't know where everyone.
Jordan Matthews?
Fuck.
If he's thrown to Jordan Reed, we've got problems.
Yeah. And there's a big trade happening. Justin's going to be very unhappy. Evan, did you have anything else to add on Carson Wentz?
Pass.
You always pass. I don't understand. You never have any insight.
I have plenty of insight.
Why don't we move into the next position? We're going to be talking about running backs. We first have Lamar Miller on the docket. Evan, what are your thoughts on Lamar Miller for this upcoming season?
My thoughts are I'm not as high on him as you are. I applaud the stones, man, but I really want to hear more of what you have to say. He wasn't fantastic down the stretch, and he was playing really bad run defenses. Over, like, if you cut the games he played in half, he was half a yard per carry worse over the second half, and he faced If you're looking in terms of like defensive DVOA against the rush, the Lions were 23rd worst. The Jags were the best one that he faced, and that was 12th. He faced them twice. The Raiders were 18th. The Chargers were 15th. The Packers were 14th, and the Colts were 32nd. You know, he should have probably had better numbers in the second half. And, you know, everybody was so excited about this role. It's kind of like when the Bills told CJ Spiller they were going to give him the ball until he, you know, was going to throw up, and then he just ended up shitting the bed, which is kind of what Lamar Miller did. So I'm not as excited, and I'm really interested to hear your thoughts and why you have him as high as you do.
I mean, he averaged a ton of runs last year, so I do think that as he gets more acclimated to Bill O'Brien's offense, they'll keep using him to a high capacity. They didn't really use him a ton in the passing game. He only had 40 targets. I think that he'll be a much better runner this year in terms of what he does. He only had 5 touchdowns last year, and obviously touchdowns are the biggest thing in fantasy football that you cannot predict. But I could see an improvement on there. I do think that he'll improve on the yards per carry that he had. It would be nice to see him get more involved in passing game, considering he caught them at more of a closer to a plus 75% catch rate. I just think that there's a lot of improvement here considering how much his usage was and considering what the rest of the offense has. They don't have anyone stellar at quarterback. I feel that that means they're going to have to lean on the rushing attack a little bit more, and I think that it will improve this year more so than anything. What are your thoughts, Eric?
Well, Miller was a guy I was really high on coming in just because I kind of always liked, well, last year, I mean, I always liked kind of what he brought to the table with Miami, but they'd never give him a role. And then when they did, they kind of didn't really utilize him. And I really kind of liked the offense he was going into with Bill O'Brien. He got a lot of touches, and really, you know, when you're touching the ball over 300 times, you kind of expect a little bit more than what he did. Granted, you know, the offensive line isn't that great. You had a lot of quarterback issues, and he was hurt part of the time too. But it really just seemed like every week you'd roll him out there, you'd get the same stat line, like 22 carries for 68 yards. You'd have a handful of catches for another 30, and that was basically it. He never really showed kind of that the game-breaking potential he had, you know, last year, and kind of what he'd flashed time to time with the Dolphins. You know, they did draft Donta Foreman. He'll probably work in a little bit more. I don't think he'll take touches right off the bat, but, you know, anytime a team starts drafting another running back at a, you know, within the top portion of the draft, it starts to give you a little bit of pause on it going into it. I'm not as high on him as I was last year. I'm still willing to take a little bit more of a risk with him just given the potential upside, but I'm definitely not as high on him as I was.
And what about you, Donnie?
So Lamar Miller, he basically disappoints every season. I mean, we always expect him to be this bell cow running back. And he had 268 carries last year. Just broke 1,000 yards, 5 rushing touchdowns, like you said. But how is, I mean, they did get rid of Osweiler. They drafted Deshaun Watson, and they still have Tom Savage. But, I mean, they brought in Foreman. Foreman is a bigger running back, probably a goal line back in the NFL. So there's a chance he takes touchdowns away from Miller. I mean, you're just taking Miller basically because he is the lead. He is the lead running back. He is going to get 250 plus carries, but I mean, there's not a whole lot. The touchdowns, 5 touchdowns, that seems about right again for this year with the current roster.
I mean, just looking at the other rankings, what makes DeMarco Murray such a more ideal option considering the other pieces that are there, or someone that's like a Jordan Howard or a Jay Ajayi? You know, those are some people that you guys have a little bit higher, that you guys have ranked that you have better than where you have Lamar Miller. And I'm trying to think of why you guys like certain players of that nature where they aren't the number one player in that offense. Now, I understand that they do have DeAndre Hopkins, but given the quarterback situation, I'm not sure if we can really say that DeAndre Hopkins is the number one fantasy player in Texas right now. Or in Houston.
I think for me, I mean, with, you know, mentioning guys like DeMarco Murray, Jordan Howard, you know, even like, you know, LeSean McCoy, Melvin Gordon in that area, you know, one, you're going to get a little bit more of a touchdown boost just because as soon as those teams get in the red zone, you know what's coming for three plays in a row. Generally, all of them are going to be 20-plus touches. And you know, well, Murray's had some health issues in the past. Same thing with McCoy. You generally have a higher potential floor with them than I think what Lamar Miller's going to bring within the offense. I think the Murray comp, you know, it's kind of interesting given it's almost a similar situation other than the wide receivers for Tennessee are probably far worse than what you've got with Houston. But you know what you're going to get game in and game out from DeMarco Murray. And it's, you know, he's just a little bit more kind of that consistent track record as far as Murray goes anyway, in my opinion.
Evan, anything to add?
I'll happily take whatever DeMarco Murray or Devonta Freeman or I mean I'm not a huge Jordan Howard guy, but if you would like to take either of the other two on a bet, I'd love to hear you sing karaoke, man.
I mean, do you really expect that DeMarco Murray is probably going to have another 12 touchdowns this upcoming season or 1,600 total yards given the other pieces in that offense?
You don't think it's possible that Lamar Miller just flames possible. Out?
I'm just saying, do you think it's likely?
Yes. I can, you know, barring injury, and granted you got that for both of them, I mean, DeMarco is that entire offense predominantly. Mariota, any of that passing game is a supplemental piece to that offense. They're going to run, and they're going to run it a lot. I mean, DeMarco's touches are, you know, pretty significant. He's their best receiver for the most part last year, just because the rest of that core is terrible. I mean, that team is going to succeed or fail based on how DeMarco does on offense predominantly. He's just got a larger, more expanded, consistent role, I think, than what you're going to see from Miller.
And you guys don't expect Derrick Henry to make any improvements that will eat into DeMarco Murray's overall value this year? Anyone?
I guess for me, I mean, you look at last year, you kind of had some of the Derrick Henry experiment, but he's so limited in his overall kind of scope of what he can do in that offense. You're basically, you know, he's going to be limited to those 5 or 10 carry game spells. I don't expect him to get a larger role of that offense because he really hasn't shown a lot, and he kept getting destroyed on pass block last year when he was in on those situations. So until you get in a, you know, situation, especially a team that thrives off of play action to some extent, you're not going to get significant enough playing time, in my opinion, to eat into DeMarco Murray.
I guess for me, I mean, the biggest player that I would be the most shocked about is probably Jordan Howard, given the fact that Chicago's probably got worse than where they were on offense last year. I mean, they do lose Jeffrey, they lose Cutler. I'm not sure if Trubisky is going to be any improvement over that. I'm not sure if they have enough offense that they don't have 8 guys stacked in the box against Howard every single time. So that's kind of why I'm a little surprised that you guys all have him higher than where you have Lamar Miller.
Well, with the if you're playing the Texans, wouldn't you just stack the box against them and let Savage or Watson beat you too? I mean, isn't it the same?
I mean, I suppose, but you still have to worry about DeAndre Hopkins in that offense, and that's something that Chicago doesn't have. They don't have an all-star type player in that aspect, and we don't really know what type of player DeSean Jackson is going to or Deshaun Watson's going to be in the NFL. And just like we don't know what Trubisky's going to be, but Trubisky doesn't really have anyone to lean on offensively that's a big passing target. And at least in Houston, there's a few. You know, you still have DeAndre Hopkins and you have Lamar Miller. That's just a minimum, at minimum, two players. It's not like Jordan Howard's a big receiving threat. I mean, he had 50 targets last year, but he only caught 29 of them. So I'm not sure if he's as reliable as what you want to be leaned on from the offensive standpoint in terms of pass catching. So that's the only reason I bring that up.
I think with Howard, too, though, you got to remember last year, yeah, they had Cutler, but realistically, they really didn't have Alshon last year either. You know, it was basically Cam Meredith and Eddie Royal running the show at wide receiver. So if he can put up those numbers basically with those two, granted, Cutler's a much better quarterback than what they've got now. You know, he's basically doing it with the same supporting cast, just the decrease as a quarterback. I would expect his production go down just a little bit because, like you said, you are going to get that stack-in-the-box effect. But I just, you know, with what he did last year, I don't see that there's going to be a situation you're going to have significant drop-off if the only cog that's missing is the quarterback at this point.
Evan, did you have anything else to add?
I don't know. You've been talking a lot about the Bears, and Trubisky's name does not have an N in it. Say it one more time for me. Mitch Trubisky.
Shut up, Evan.
And hey, the one thing I will say is, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is way better than Kevin White is, and I wouldn't even begin to say that they're in the same breath. But when you're talking about Chicago not having a piece like that, I think we could see things from Kevin White if he could just stay on the damn field.
Fair enough. Why don't we move into the next part? That's going to be talking about Joe Mixon. What are your thoughts on Joe Mixon coming into this season, Donnie?
I like Mixon a lot as long as he can basically take the starting job. I mean, talent-wise, it's all there. He did it all at Oklahoma last year. It's just, is he going to get the job over Geo and Jeremy Hill? Which, I mean, with where they took him and the risks that they took, it's hard to imagine that they don't start him. They did lose two of their best offensive linemen, though, this offseason, so that could shake things up a little bit, but it's hard to imagine him not taking the job and running with it.
What about you, Evan? What are your thoughts on Mixon?
I love his tape on the field. I don't know how much we need to be worried about the off-the-field stuff. I understand why people would be hesitant about, you know, picking him, but I do think he is probably the best receiving back in this draft. And I was having a talk with some friends about Mixon versus McCaffrey this year. I don't understand the McCaffrey hype, and I'm much more comfortable with Mixon in that range. I don't know if you guys are in the same boat and putting your PPR chips there, because I think that is kind of the decision you're going to have to make in that, like, late third, early fourth round from some of the early mocks I've been doing, as far as what's going to happen with, you know, Gio Bernard, who I haven't really heard a whole lot of positive you know, reports on his health so far this year, and Jeremy Hill kind of, you know, is what he is. So I think especially, you know, given the situation, Mixon has the opportunity to be an awesome, you know, piece for your team.
And what about you, Eric?
Yeah, I like Mixon a lot, too. He's actually one of the guys that I pretty much in most of my drafts I'm trying to target. You know, Gio's coming off of a rather significant ACL tear. Anytime you get that, especially with backs that rely significantly on agility, it usually takes them a good full season under the belt before they start regaining any semblance of production. And you know, Mixon's not one, like with Jeremy Hill, where you're not going to use him in a passing game. You'd have to take him out to put Geo in. Mixon's basically an entire, I mean, he could be on the field the entire time, other than spells. I like Mixon, especially with the organization he went to. It's a great fit because Cincinnati's done rather well taking these players before that have had behavioral issues off the field like this, that they've actually were able to, I don't want to say rehabilitate him, but keep him in check and keep him under control. I mean, how long has Pac-Man Jones been on that roster? And basically been pretty damn quiet overall compared to what he was in Tennessee. You know, I think with that organization, with that style of offense and who's in front of him, quote unquote, on the depth chart right now, realistically, you could be picking up a full, you know, a bell cow back, you know, fourth round, if you're lucky, maybe early fifth. That's all purpose back and can pretty much do it all. I like Mixon a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mixon, and I like the ability that he may get thrown into a very good ability. I want to rephrase that. I think he's going to get thrown into the chance to actually be the top back for the team. But at the same point in time, they still have other running backs there. Donnie did say that they did lose their top two, or two of their top offensive linemen. All that type of stuff is going to hurt. Now, obviously, we've seen Gio Bernard not perform overly well. We have seen Jeremy Hill not perform overly well at times. So I do think that the opportunity for Mixon is there. But at the same point in time, with how many pieces there are and with the loss of the two offensive linemen, I'm thinking it's a little tough to just be able to rely on a rookie as a top 20 pick, even given the situation. Obviously, I could have this come back and bite me, but I try to go on to the safer side and state that I figured there was other players that may not have as much upside as Mixon that I felt were a little more trustworthy for at least the beginning part of this season. Did you have some
just the one report that I saw on Geo said that week one is an ambitious but realistic timetable. So if week one is just considered ambitious, then I don't know how much you should be factoring into Gio Bernard. And I do think that is a pretty good role for whoever fills it.
I do too. I don't think that Bernard's going to be back by the beginning of the season, but even if Mixon does do well, does that mean that they're going to just completely cut Gio out once he's back? You know, we have seen that when Gio's been out in the past and Jeremy Hill is the only person there, that Gio comes back and he's still involved in the offense. You see that, you see it the other way around as well for them. I don't think that they're going to just completely leave Gio Bernard out of the rotation when he comes back, even if he is strictly a pass catcher, even if they use him in trick plays and such. But I don't think that we won't see enough out of all three of them this year that Mixon is able to become top 20 as a significant piece right away.
Well, and I think the one you really got to see him unseating is Hill. It's not Gio. Realistically, and you know, you look at that kind of offense, and Hill was terrible last year. You know, it shouldn't take a whole lot for him to be able to unseat him. As long as his pass pro is decent, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't roll with Mixon in a significant, if not starting role, by the time they break camp.
I heard something that Jeremy Hill's basically on the bubble to make the roster currently. So, I mean, that could be a big deal. That could really boost him up.
I mean, I guess we'll have to see. I do have a report from RotoWire that came out Friday, July 7th, so just a few days ago, that even though they did add Joe Mixon in the second round, they still expect him to be involved in the offense. I don't know if he is borderline to make the team, and we have seen Hill basically disappear at times. And we do know that Marvin Lewis does like to be able to use his rookie running backs to a good amount. He had both Hill and Gio Bernard top 225 touches when they both were respective rookies. So I do think that there's the opportunity for Mixon. I'm just not sure if I am ready to rely on him as a top 20 pick at this current time at the running back position. Why don't we move into the last running back, and that's going to be talking about LeGarrette Blount. What are your thoughts on LeGarrette Blount for this season, Eric?
Well, Blount obviously has a significant downgrade in team moving to the Eagles from the Patriots. You always kind of wonder sometimes when you get players that move off of the Patriots and go to other teams, and then all of a sudden they disappear. You know, you get players like back in their first initial Super Bowl runs, like David Givens and Deion Branch, as soon as they left New England, they just disappeared. A lot of what, you know, Blount was able to do in New England, he had a lot of significant goal line work where a lot of his value was. He does step into a team situation that, you know, he'll be able to actually get a pretty decent role right off the bat just because he's basically it there. As soon as Ryan Matthews gets cleared, they're probably going to cut him so they don't have to pay him a bonus or a medical exemption. And otherwise, all they've got is kind of scat back roles with Darren Sproles, Wendell Smallwood, and the running back from San Diego State that they drafted. So he should still maintain a pretty good starter's role. He's going to get probably a little bit more consistent touches, whereas in New England, you know, you kind of get that running back by committee where Lord knows who's going to get the ball any given week. But I don't think his effectiveness will be as high as it was with New England. So I'm lower on him than I was, coming into last season.
What about you, Evan? You're the high person in Friends with Fantasy Benefits at 17. Why are you so high on LeGarrette Blount?
And I would like to, you know, use this as a point to say this is our first run of rankings. And while I was kind of looking into some of the numbers, he's probably going to be ticked back a little bit for me. But like Eric was saying, I do like the, you know, share of the offense that I believe that he's going to have. We talked about the offense as a whole when we talked Carson Wentz. And I do think, you know, that's a positive. While it's a step off from the Patriots, the Eagles scored, well, it was like 4 points less a game. I was looking at it. So, I mean, it's not a, you know, a huge runoff or anything like that. The one thing that I did notice that I wanted to bring up was that Philly under Doug Peterson in their first in his first year was a top 10 team in running plays from shotgun. And Blount has run the ball less than 100 times out of the shotgun formation his entire career. And his yards per carry is half a yard less than, you know, the rest of what he just sees under center. So I do kind of wonder how this offense is going to look in 2017 if Blount's kind of going to force their hand formation wise. And he probably does deserve to be rolled a, you know, tick or two back, but I do still really like his goal line ability and his ability to put points on the board for your team.
What about you, Donnie? What are your thoughts on LeGarrette Blount?
So with Blount, I mean, you're getting the touchdowns. That's basically what you're paying for. Ryan Matthews was a serviceable running back two last year's part flex. And now they added LeGarrette Blount. The Eagles were number 10 in rush attempts per game last year. So, I mean, the touches are going to be there. Ryan Matthews will probably not make the roster like you guys were saying. But, I mean, You're basically going to take Blount for the touchdowns. The 1,000 yards that he rushed for last year, probably not going to repeat those numbers, but 10 touchdowns is pretty much what you should expect from LeGarrette Blount this year.
I think with Blount, too, part of the thing is, you know, other than his rookie season, it's the first year that he's ever had that much significant production. Whether you buy into the whole running back heading into age, you know, whatever season or not, he is getting up in age. He's going to turn 31. It looks like the Eagles are actually working on to make sure he's within a certain weight range, which, you know, regardless of whether you think it's a concern or not, they actually want him to play less than what he was playing for at New England. So, you know, he's kind of like a power back that doesn't really have that significant kind of power back burst or kind of explosion that you normally see running over people most of the time. I think it's an okay offense for him to come in. He gets an O-line upgrade, but I think you're going to get a lot of hype coming in on him just based off of what he did last season. And I'm trying, part of my ranking too is to kind of save myself from myself, because I really liked him in the past. But, you know, I don't think he's going to put up the numbers he did last year. And I'm kind of hedging my bets on that right now with the ranking.
I'm relatively high on him considering that I'm the number two on the staff for his overall rank. And I think that he's still going to have a good year. He's still going to be utilized. It does worry me about the fact that he doesn't take a lot of run plays out of the shotgun. So I do think that if they do change the formation types that they run, that it will possibly signal to the opposing defense that they are going to be running a run play as opposed to a pass play. So they may have to really balance out that offense in terms of formation. But I do think that he's still going to be consistent. I think he's going to be the most consistent back that they have. And I do think that Doug Peterson is going to try to rely on him so that they can still bring Carson Wentz along. As I had stated, I think that they need to significantly work on what they do with him, and I think that they'll lean on Blunt as a result. Why don't we move into the wide receivers, and we're going to talk about Mike Evans. Normally, we don't really talk about someone who most of us have as the number two overall wide receiver, but Eric, is there a reason you have him at number six?
I like other guys more.
Well, that's such a great take. Donnie.
No, there's actually a lot of reason behind it, not just the fact that I prefer other receivers to Evans. You know, Evans has kind of done this thing the last couple seasons where he's kind of faded off towards the stretch, and there's another receiver we'll talk about that's kind of had similar status. The big difference is you're going into the season with a team that's somewhat changed its philosophy as far as how they run their offense to some extent. You're seeing the defense actually come in and step up, and they're, to some extent, Tampa's starting to revert a little bit back to kind of what they were in the early 2000s, a little more ball control, a little more reliance on the defense than they have in years past. I think, to me, the signing of DeSean Jackson, you bring in O.J. Howard, too. You've got a couple more mouths to feed, which is going to cut into his targets to some extent, whereas it's not just him and the ghost of Vincent Jackson running down the field, and then Adam Humphries just running crossing routes all day. I think, for me, part of it's just the change in some of the system from what I've seen, and just, you know, there's other guys I'd rather have. You know, Odell Beckham Jr. higher, I'd rather have A.J. Green ahead of him. I'd rather have Jordy Nelson ahead of him. So there is some preference in there too, but a lot of it is, I think there's enough of a shift to where I'm bumping him down due to that.
What are your thoughts on him, Donnie?
Well, with Mike Evans, it's touchdown is king. I mean, is there anyone better in the league for catching touchdowns than Mike Evans? He had 12 touchdowns last year. He was targeted 17 times in the red zone. At 6'5", I mean, you'll get the 1,000 yards. The targets, he had 175 targets last year. That probably going to go down with Jackson and Howard coming in. But, I mean, the touchdowns are always going to be there. Jackson's not a red zone target. O.J. Howard, who knows what we're going to get out of him. So, I mean, pretty much it's hard to expect anything than what he did last year with 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns.
And Evan?
I love Mike Evans. I was fairly vocal on him last year as a guy that I was taking at, like, the early second round, like a 1-2 wheel pick. I just didn't have the stones to put him over Robinson and Hopkins, and now it just seems kind of foolish that we were even having those conversations. I'm just all aboard the Buccaneers. I like Donnie was saying, DeSean Jackson's not a red zone target. Evans kind of put together the yardage and the touchdowns from his first 2 years into one kind of monster season, and he definitely has it in him again. I love him, and I am, you know, you're talking about guys that you like in front of him, Eric. You know, like, I could see putting a Julio or an Odell in front of him, but it's just kind of the stand that I felt like taking this year.
My thoughts behind having Evans over players like Odell and Julio is just that the fact that I don't really have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about potential injury like I do with Julio. I don't have to worry about that same thing with A.J. Green or Jordy Nelson. Same thing with Dez Bryant even. I think those are all players that could easily be the number two fantasy player, given the fact that they know how to score touchdowns, they can get yards after the catch, they get plenty of catches, so in PPR standing, PPR scoring, there's a big benefit there. I just think that with the other additions that they've made in their offensive skill set players, and I think that Jameis Winston's going to take another step forward, I do think that Mike Evans is able to put up a top two fantasy type season, given the fact that he does get fed the ball, he gets tons of yards because of it. He's big enough that he's going to get yards after the catch. He's always going to be targeted in the red zone a ton because of how big he is. So I think the ability for him to score a lot of touchdowns is significant. And I think for us as rankers that it's our due diligence to put him as a top three player because of the ability that he does possess. And even though I like players like Julio and Odell more in terms of their overall talent, I think that what he has going for him in Tampa Bay has to propel him above those two.
Yeah, and he's a guy that they look, just real quick as a fun fact, he led the league in first down receptions at 81. The next highest was T.Y. Hilton at 66. So he's kind of integral into what Tampa Bay wants to do. I think they'll keep throwing him the ball, despite whoever they're bringing in.
Last year, there was a few times where Jameis would just kind of, he kind of just locks in on Mike Evans, and there'll be whole drives and possessions where it's just all Mike Evans. And I mean, it's hard to imagine anything changing with Winston not locking in on Mike Evans, even though they did bring in Jackson and Howard.
Eric, did you have anything else to add on top of this?
No, and you know, when we're looking at kind of the ranking of this, we're kind of, I mean, he's definitely a clear-cut wide receiver one, no issue. He's a guy that, depending who's there, I may take a little bit, higher. But for me, I mean, it's still going to be, you know, Antonio, Odell, and Julio ahead of him by any stretch. But, you know, the only thing that's kind of given me a little pause on Evans is kind of that the 2015 season where he put up similar yard and catch totals, but he only had three touchdowns that year. You know, so it's a little bit there. You've got a little bit more kind of that boom bust volatility there as far as what he's got overall. I mean, as long as those red zone targets stay up there, I mean, you're definitely going to be fine. I just expect some of his production to decrease a little bit. And, you know, if that offense has actually moved forward, and we'll see what happens with Doug Martin too coming back in week four, but I just don't think his ceiling's as high as it was last year, but that's just me.
Why don't we move into the next wide receiver that's going to be talking about Amari Cooper. I think that Amari Cooper, given the fact that that offense has taken a big step forward from 2 years ago to last year, that Amari Cooper could yet again make another jump. I have him as the top-ranked wide receiver amongst us and amongst the rest of the staff. I have him at number 6. I just think that Amari Cooper, given the fact that Derek Carr made significant improvements in last year, is going to continue to mesh with him. I think that we could see a very good quarterback-wide receiver combo – I just think that the ability for him to make the catch, score touchdowns, I think that it's just going to propel him into that top echelon of wide receivers, and I don't really see a lot that's going to make me necessarily think that he won't. He only had 5 touchdowns last year. I could see an improvement in that. Crabtree ended up having more targets than Amari Cooper. I do think that Amari Cooper is going to continue to get fed the ball. I think that Crabtree and him may have a slight role reversal this year, and Crabtree may take a hit in terms of what he actually is going to produce as Cooper just continues to grow. What are your thoughts, Evan?
Why Crabtree's been the better receiver for 2 years in a row. Why do we just magically think that the target share is going to change and that he deserves to go, 20 spots and for the overall? I'm the high man on Crabtree on our side, so I guess I'll be the focal point for it. The one thing as far as Cooper's concerned, I find it kind of amazing that he only had 4 games where he tallied more than 100 receiving yards. And he was second in the league with 15 catches over 25 yards, just behind T.Y. Hilton. So, I mean, I do think that there is growth potential and that, a breakout could be looming. But come on, dog. Crabtree has done it twice. He's been the better receiver. Let's give the guy a little respect.
I mean, I get that. But, I mean, Cooper's had 11 touchdowns in 2 seasons. I think that number, like we were saying before, touchdowns are fluky. It wouldn't be totally impossible if he had like an 8 touchdown or 9 touchdown season. He had 150 more reception yards than Crabtree in 6 less catches and in 13 less targets. So I do think that there is more big playability. Yes, I'm not saying that Crabtree is a bad player. I was a big fan of Crabtree when he came out at Texas Tech, but I do think that Cooper could continue to make bigger strides as he gets more acclimated to the NFL. He's still a young player, so I don't think that it's totally impossible for him to make significant improvements considering what we've seen from season 1 to season 2.
What are your thoughts, Eric?
I just want to talk. No, I think the big thing with Cooper, and you kind of saw it rookie year two, is he started out really strong and then faded down the stretch both the last 2 seasons. You know, watching any of the Oakland games, you kind of get the feeling that, Carr would basically quit looking his way because he just wasn't getting the separation. Now, a lot of his catches, when you did get those big plays, they were kind of few and far between from a consistency standpoint, especially towards the end of the year, to where, a lot of the DFS stuff, you'd have everybody in a favorable matchup for Cooper penciling him in, and you'd just pencil in Crabtree because you knew he was going to outperform Cooper every single week. And I think a lot of that was the role, is that Carr genuinely trusted him a little bit more than Cooper. I think if Cooper, that third year wide receiver, here we go. But I think it's a situation, if he is going to make that step forward into that upper echelon, elite receiver class, this has got to be the year to do it. But he's got to take a little bit more of a commanding presence on the field and not just fade away to where Carr's running 10-yard checkdowns to Crabtree because he's not open.
What are your thoughts, Donnie?
So with Cooper, I mean, it's hard to think he gets more than 6 touchdowns unless Carr does like end up trusting Cooper more. I mean, Crabtree was always their guy that Carr would go to in any clutch situation, anytime they needed a first down, on third down, anytime they were in the red zone. I mean, Crabtree was 4th in red zone targets last year, and Seth Roberts was 6th in red zone targets last year. Plus, they added Jared Cook, replaced Latavius Murray with Marshawn Lynch, brought in Cordell Patterson. There's a lot of mouths to feed. But Cooper has added 15 to 20 pounds of muscle in the offseason, but he has faded in the second half both years. I've heard rumors of injuries in the second half that he basically kept quiet, but I think it's more of a trust thing with Carr and Crabtree that led to Cooper kind of checking out, maybe making some bonehead drops, and that's about it.
Evan, anything else to add?
No, Michael Crabtree is amazing. That's all I have to say.
Why don't we move into the last player at the wide receiver position? That's going to be Davante Adams. Evan, what are your thoughts on Adams coming into this season?
There's an awesome piece over on FanSided, and I know I like to get nerdy and break down numbers, but it was basically breaking down the target percentage of the Green Bay passing offense. I believe it was posted yesterday. I don't have the article in front of me, so I can't give the dude credit. Go track it down. It's the internet. It's not hard to find. I think the hype on Adams might be getting a little out of control. He caught 62% of balls thrown his way last year. I think that's kind of a high watermark. He's not a fantastic receiver, and I think people are betting more on the situation than the skills. I think as a group, we kind of might be a little low on Randall Cobb if we're going to talk about other cogs in the Packer offense and what they might do for Adams' production. I want to hear what everybody else has to say on Adams, because I want to see if people are defending him or if they think his hands are just as big of an issue as I do.
What about you, Donnie?
With Adams, he did take a big step between 15 and 16. It's hard to predict. I mean, with Rodgers throwing him the ball, the targets, it's all going to be there. The yards, it should all be there. It kind of depends what Randall Cobb's going to do. I mean, if Randall Cobb's like he has been the last couple of years, Davante Adams is clearly the second guy behind Jordy Nelson. And Adams was six with 20 red zone targets also last year. And with between him and Jordy Nelson, I mean, they're gonna bring down the touchdowns. It just kind of depends what you're gonna get from Martellus Bennett, Randall Cobb, and the rest of the offense.
Sorry, keep
talking over me.
Trying to make a smoother transition, I think. I don't know. We'll find out. So far, it's not working. I think with Davante, just watching a lot of Packers games, just because that's my favorite team, the team I generally follow a lot, he's kind of a maddening receiver. He kind of is Mario Manningham-ish in a sense, where he can drop the easiest pass that gets thrown to him and then make the ridiculous catch that, you know, you've got a 10% chance or less to actually make the reception. But the one that you should make reliably game in and game out, you're dropping every time. A lot of his production, he did have pretty good yards after the catch last year comparatively to his average of the first 3 years, but he was a guy that came in as a fairly highly touted rookie, was expected to come into that system, and basically ended up getting benched and demoted for guys like Jeff Janis, in that offense. You do have to worry a little bit more about Martellus Bennett, at least through September. After that, he kind of fades off generally, so you know, the big kind of key is what role Cobb plays coming back in there. If he kind of asserts the role he had the prior year, I think Adams gets regulated to more of a third option within that offense. And you'll probably see a little bit more numbers like you used to see from like James Jones when he was running their wide receiver two routes, where if he's not getting that touchdown production, you're getting nothing that week.
I mean, for me, I just don't see that 12 touchdown as a repeatable thing. He had, I believe it was a 16% of his catches that were touchdowns, which is an extremely high number and is very unsustainable. I understand that you're playing with Aaron Rodgers, but I think we need to see another step in Devontae Adams in terms of where his progression is and where his ability to catch the ball and make all of those catches are for me to be able to move him a little higher. I am the low man. I feel like Evan picked this list strictly so that we could just look at how low I am on all these specific players. But I think that he has the capability of being a top 20, even a top 15 player, but he's got to show more consistency with making those catches. He's got to get over 1,000 yards, and he's got to show that he can do stuff without scoring touchdowns specifically. Why don't we move into the tight end class? And the first player we're going to be talking about is Kyle Rudolph. Evan, why don't you start us off with Kyle?
Yeah, I'm actually really high on Kyle Rudolph this year. I think there's room for him to go up. If we know two things about Brad Ford is that he's made of styrofoam and that he loves to focus on his tight ends. And that's kind of what made, you know, Zach Ertz helium be what it was when Bradford was back in Philadelphia. Rudolph is a guy that's often knocked for being red zone dependent, and he wasn't that fantastic in the red zone last year. He had 3 touchdowns on, I think it was like 24 red zone targets last year. And I think the work is going to be there for Rudolph. It's not going to be Teddy Bridgewater, like you were saying, Ben. Like, were you just asleep, or did you actually think Teddy Bridgewater is going to do something this year?
Just wanted to see what you would say. I like Riley.
If I would berate you endlessly, yes, that's exactly what I did when you said nonsense like that.
You know, sometimes I don't want a podcast with you because you're not a nice person. You understand that? You're like Justin, but I have to actually talk to you.
I'm like a Sour Patch Kid.
Yeah, exactly. Except you're not sweet, ever.
Lies. Anyways, Eric, somebody else. Let's talk about Kyle Rudolph, shall we?
Donnie, what are your thoughts?
I mean, if Bradford is, as long as Bradford's the quarterback, I mean, Kyle Rudolph's is basically his number one guy. With all these checkdowns that he does, Rudolph's the guy, his main target. He was second last year in red zone targets, which led to part of the breakout. He was only behind Jordy with 24 targets in the red zone. And Minnesota was 12th in passing attempts, so that probably won't change. But they did bring in Latavius and Davin Cook and Michael Floyd. So, I mean, it's hard to know what you're going to get with the running backs, with Latavius Murray and Davin Cook. Michael Floyd, who knows what you can get from that guy. But I mean, with as long as Bradford's back there and as long as he's healthy, I mean, Rudolph's is the number one guy, the number one target, basically, in for Minnesota.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I've liked Rudolph a lot. I've liked him, you know, I got to watch him destroy my Michigan Wolverines in college, and then been getting to watch him run rampant over Green Bay's secondary, so it's been really pleasurable 6 years watching him do it. He's a really good athletic mismatch on the field just because of his size. He's working back into a change in offense, which, thankfully, for better or worse, I mean, you know, Norv Turner's no longer in Minnesota, so they've got a little bit more reliable play call. You've got a little bit more reliable kind of offensive scheme and structure to where, you know, I think what Rudolph gave you last season, I don't see that there's any reason you're not going to get the same production. He is going to be red zone dependent, but, I mean, realistically, when you're looking at tight end production, that's kind of what you're looking for a lot of their value, because you're not going to get as generally a lot of, you know, receptions or yardage overall. So I'm fine, you know, letting everybody take a little bit higher guy and then taking, you know, Kyle Rudolph as my tight end one and just running with it. The guy's been solid and consistent. Just, I think this year you're going to see kind of more of the same. I don't think the impact of, you know, Latavius Murray, depending how he comes back, and Dalvin Cook is really going to have that much of an impact in the offense this year.
Yeah, I do like that he is a consistent tight end, and he will be relied upon. I have him as 10 only for the fact that I do think that there are some other good tight ends that, you know, if he's not scoring those 7 touchdowns, is he going to have as much value? And in a regular standard league, he's obviously not someone who's likely to get over 1,000 yards. I don't even think he'll get to 900 yards. I'd like to see him be able to consistently go 800 from year to year, but he does get a lot of targets, which is good for his overall value. I just think that there are some other good tight ends that you could rely on that didn't have great fantasy seasons last year in terms of overall scoring because of injuries. You know, you're going to have Gronkowski come back. You're going to have Jordan Reed hopefully healthy again. Martellus Bennett is finally a tight end that Aaron Rodgers hasn't really had, so we'll see if there's any value there. I still expect, you know, a player like Kobe Fleener to take another step forward. So there are players that I could easily say, you know, I don't necessarily have to go Kyle Rudolph, much like Eric was saying, or I don't have to go one of the other top-tier guys and I can go Kyle Rudolph, but I don't think if I miss out on Kyle Rudolph, I'm going to be overly disappointed because I do think there is talent at the tight end ranks this year.
He's a guy I generally end up with a lot because I don't draft tight end early. You know, unless there's a ridiculous value that drops, you know, I'm usually not taking a tight end until, you know, in a standard draft, you know, rounds 8 or 10 at the earliest, just because I'd rather load up on high end running back and wide receiver. So I almost never end up with anybody that's inside, you know, the normal status quo top, you know, 7 or 8 tight ends. I usually end up with guys like Rudolph, and I don't really worry about it that much.
While we move into the last part we're going to be talking about, that's O.J. Howard. Why do you guys expect that O.J. Howard is going to be such a significant player in the offense in his rookie season and that Cameron Brate won't be? Why don't we start with you, Eric?
I never said that. I don't expect Howard to do a whole lot initially anyway. You know, you look at kind of the production of any of your first-year rookie tight ends, it's been pretty poor for a really long time. You know, you got a guy coming in that's probably the best overall tight end within the class. He's a good blocker. He's a great receiver. He's a big target. But usually these guys, you know, as they come in, tight end anymore isn't going to be your top, you know, target. They're generally going to be, you know, third or fourth on the list overall. So they generally never get the production. There's a lot more significant nuances within that position than you have in college. I just, you know, for me, I like Brate. It's kind of a situation that, do you take kind of the known commodity? Do you take a risk on the potential upside of Howard? But in all reality, in the majority of drafts I do, I'm not taking a second tight end anyway, so it's not really anything that ever comes into the conversation.
Now, Donnie, you're really flipped on these two guys. You're extremely low on Cameron Brate, very high on Howard. Why is that exactly?
Well, just, I mean, where Tampa Bay took O.J. Howard, it's hard to think that he doesn't see the field, to think that Cameron Brate, who's like he's a solid option, but I mean, they clearly saw that they could upgrade, and O.J. Howard's he's a freak athlete. He was the cleanest prospect in the draft. I mean, and Tampa Bay wants to run 2 tight end sets. That's their big part of their offense is supposed to be 2 tight end sets, and O.J. Howard gives them a playmaker in the middle. Cameron Brate's not exactly a playmaker, and they have Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson on the outside. So I mean, it's hard to imagine O.J. Howard not playing and not seeing targets. I mean, look what Hunter Henry did last year as a rookie.
What about you, Evan?
he's a freak. You can't teach size, and I think he's going to create matchup nightmares. We've seen what Brait did last year in the role, and I understand that he's still around. And I read everything that Eric's talking about, the production of rookie tight ends, and I get it. Believe me, I get it. But he's going to look awesome with those alarm clock numbers on his jersey. He is, I understand that, you know, Jameis kind of has to pump him up a little bit, just being, you know, the new guy in town and whatnot. But he's receiving a lot of praise. And I do think that on, you know, just sheer talent, he's a guy that we are going to be talking about in the next, you know, 3 years, kind of up in this Jordan Reed, Greg Olsen level. And it's just, you know, I have him ranked 14th, buying in at that level for that kind of talent, I don't think is crazy. And if he sucks, then I just cut him and no love lost.
That's a great way to look at it.
Is it wrong? I mean,
no, I personally think that while he is overly talented, we have seen players like Eric Ebron who was taken very high, and he's an athletic person who should have been able to come in and help the Lions offense right away, and we saw very little fantasy value out of him.
But that wasn't Ebron's fault. That was the Lions' fault because they wanted to bring in guys like Anquan Boldin and take targets from him. And, you know, that's, the, you know, Ebron's fault for getting hurt. You can't
I understand that. But I do think that there is the ability with Mike Evans being there that it makes it a little tough for us to necessarily just go and rely on O.J. Howard to just go and have a fantastic season right away. I mean, yes, I do think that he's got a lot of upside. I just don't know if it happens right away in his first year, and that's the problem. I mean, I'd like to see it because I was a big fan of him. I definitely wanted him to be able to come to the Giants, and they weren't able to get him. But I think with the addition of DeSean Jackson, you still have Mike Evans. Like I said, Humphreys is a decent player. I do think that it's not completely impossible that O.J. Howard doesn't have a significant amount of fantasy value. I still think that Doug Martin will have, you know, a decent year, and I understand that Jameis Winston is going to take a step up, but I just don't think that Cameron Brait just gets tossed aside as easily. So I think that Cameron Brait's the person who starts the year, and that's where my ranking indicates right now that if I was to pick one of those two players, I'm going to go with the one who I expect to start off the season strong, and that's Cameron Brait. Maybe during the second half that changes, but my ranking reflects where we are to start the season. So,
if anyone's throwing Cameron Brait aside, it's O.J. Howard. This dude is huge. I mean, he's going to, like I said, he's going to be a matchup nightmare.
I do agree with that. I think it just takes time for that to develop.
I think to his benefit, at least he goes to a system where the quarterback, you know, and even through college, and it's kind of been beaten to death. But Winston does like utilizing the tight end position a pretty significant amount. So if he does unseat, you know, Cameron Brait initially, or even, you know, quarter of the way into the season, you could see pretty decent production from him. But I'm still kind of hedging my bets a little bit on Howard initially. Just, you know, it's hard to look past 17 years of trends when you're looking at guys like Randy McMichael as one of the only two in the last 17 years to get more than 600 yards in their first rookie season. So it's kind of pumps the brakes a little bit on it, but I totally agree with Evan as far as Howard's physical ability is fantastic.
So usually rookie tight ends, I mean, usually the reason they don't play is because they can't pick up the blocking scheme, or they're just not, they don't come out of college basically being able to run block. But I mean, with Cameron Brait and O.J. Howard, couldn't they use Brait in more of a, basically use him more of a blocker and O.J. Howard in more of like passing situations?
Well, yeah, and that was one thing. I forget where I was reading it or what it was in conjecture to, but believe me, there is a point to all this. And they were talking about the evolution of tight end in the league, and that's the other thing that's kind of hard for them to grasp is, you know, especially with these big guys like Gronk that can kind of play a little further out. They don't necessarily have to play, you know, flush to the line. There's kind of more of a grasp there. And I think having somebody like Cameron Brate will allow them to be, you know, more fluid to what OJ Howard's comfortable with and not pin him into a role because they have another guy to lean on. The other thing I will say is that it doesn't matter what OJ Howard does. He's going to look better than Austin Seferian Jenkins, where he was thrown off the practice field for not knowing what the hell was going on. So at least by comparison, he's going to look better.
All right, guys. Why don't we wrap it up and tell our listeners where we can be reaching what you're working on. Why don't we start with you, Evan?
I'm at FWFB on the Twitter machine. I'm on the baseball podcast with you, and I'm just hanging out and kind of, busting everybody's chops on their rankings. Going to be doing a lot more football podcasting. So make sure you're checking out the ranks over at the website. Leave us a rate and review, and stay tuned because I'm sure we'll have plenty of information coming for you.
What about you, Donnie? Where can we reach you, and what are you working on?
So Twitter, at Donnie Miller, FWFB. Currently going to work on a trades article, basically, for baseball. Do some, like, good trades and bad trades that I've seen so far this season. So with the All-Star break coming up, and then just going to dive into football.
What about you, Eric?
So I can be reached on Twitter at Mackey, M-A-K-I-671, FWFB. Currently working on divisional previews, just kind of for the teams, kind of my expectations, hopefully get those rolling out this week. And I'm also on the basketball podcast as well.
And I can be reached at B. Brandis, FWFB. Currently on the basketball podcast with Eric Mackey. I don't know why I said your last name there, but I did. So we will be continuing to do off-season content there. I am on the baseball podcast with Evan, and also we are joined by Chuck Anderson, and Evan and Eric and I will be doing football podcasts for this upcoming season. So I'm looking forward to all of that. It will be a good time to just be able to get to all the different sports. Like Evan was saying, please give us a rate and review. It's always very much appreciated. We will be updating our football ranks during the off season, and as we progress during the off season, we will be looking more into what happens during training camp and the preseason with all the injuries and everything. So until the next time, have a great football off season, everyone.